later the U.S.-Russia missile crisis resulted. Díaz-Canel isn't Castro, and it is hard to see how a U.S. show of force could be effectively resisted when the country is on the verge of economic collapse. And this time around, Trump has plenty of support in Congress. Only the war with Iran, he says, affects the timeline for dealing with Cuba. Should Trump fail to achieve any of his objectives in Iran, as now seems likely, he may be more determined than ever to seek a win in Cuba. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 24, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Mel Gertow. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Mark Richardson, Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, and Mike Moen. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
KBOO News in depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, together with the USDA, announced a new food pyramid on January 7th as part of the 2025 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. The new food pyramid differs from previous federal nutrition guidance by inverting the traditional hierarchy of foods. Instead of emphasizing grains as the foundation, the new model prioritizes protein, full-fat dairy, healthy fats, fruits, and vegetables, while placing whole grains at the bottom. It discourages refined carbohydrates, added sugars, and highly processed foods. It also almost doubles recommended protein intake. Earlier this month, American Community Media convened experts to analyze these guidelines. The panel was hosted by health editor at American Community Media, Sunita Sarabji.
Our panelists today are Dr. Marion Nestle, Professor of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health Emerita at New York University. Ms. Nestle also served as the Senior Nutrition Policy Advisor at HHS. Dr. Christopher Gardner, Professor of Medicine at Stanford University's School of Medicine. Welcome to all of our speakers. Thank you for joining us today. We begin first with Dr. Christopher Gardner, who will provide an overall analysis of the new pyramid. Dr. Gardner will also drill down on the impact to school nutrition programs. Welcome, Dr. Gardner.
Thank you so much for having me. Hope everybody can hear. Yeah, this has been an interesting topic ever since those new guidelines got released on January 8th. And can we start with the iconic pyramid that is part of the discussion today? So we had a pyramid when all this started back in 1990-ish. Nobody really liked the pyramid, to be perfectly honest. At one point, it was the pyramid. Then it was mypyramid.gov, and it was tailored for different individuals. And in 2011, Michelle Obama helped switch that iconic figure to a plate, which was a lot easier to understand. Half your plate should be veggies and fruits. You should have some whole grains on there and some different protein sources. So there was a lot of politics involved. I happened to be involved in this round's Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, which ever since Marion's days when she worked on this, has pretty much been instituted where a group of 20 scientists would be asked for 2 years prior to the update to review all new evidence and recommend in an advisory way, not a demanding way, an advisory way, to the Secretaries of Health and Human Services and agriculture, how they might update the guidelines based on new evidence. And so participating in that for 2 years was a very rewarding experience, and we handed the advisory off to the secretaries at the time when the administration had just changed over from Biden to Trump. And so somewhat to our surprise, we handed this off to RFK Jr., who pretty much very vocally on social media dismissed our report, said it was too complicated, it was too long, and they would come up with a new approach for this. And we waited for a year to come out, a little more than a year. And when it came out, here was this upside down pyramid. Thought, who brought the pyramid back? We got rid of this a long time ago, and why is it upside down? And I just want to give a quick take on why I think it's upside down. So if you actually look at all the different 10 or so different domains of recommendations, most of them are consistent with old recommendations. So there's really a lot of sound advice in the new dietary guidelines. But I have heard from the current administration that they feel this is a dramatic shift. Nothing like this has happened in the last 40 years. This is staggering how they're going to clean up the American food system. And Mary and I had the privilege of being on sort of a preview call for this. And we thought, well, yeah, most of that is pretty sound. And I think they were a little upset hearing that advice, thinking, no, this is a huge turnaround. And so I actually take the flipping of the pyramid as being a sensationalist approach to say this is so radical that we have flipped the whole pyramid upside down. To be honest, the pyramid itself is a little hard to interpret. The veggies and fruits are scattered up and down. Sunita, you had mentioned that they are still promoting whole grains. And in fact, they say 2 to 4 servings of whole grains a day, but they've moved it to the bottom of the upside down flipped pyramid. And it looks like that is the thing you should have the least of. But if you should have 2 to 4 grains of whole grains, that part's confusing. A lot of different people have tried to put things together about 10% saturated fat as a limit with beef tallow and butter and red meat and 3 servings of whole fat dairy a day. So I think if you read the whole text, it's clearer than looking at the pyramid itself. So let me just drill down on two things. So one of the main points that our Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee came up with was we suggested across multiple domains that we have looked at, a consistent message that we're seeing is more legumes, which are beans, peas, and lentils. Americans don't usually use the word legumes, so we often said beans, peas, and lentils, and less red and processed meat. That was one of our main conclusions to the secretaries. And so it was a bit of a slap in the face to see that the pyramid had a big steak in the upper left-hand corner of the pyramid, and RFK Jr. came out on social media immediately afterwards saying beef is back, butter is back, meat is back. That was very hard to hear given the recommendations that we had just made. And prioritizing protein at every meal and taking what has been an established number for many decades about how much protein to get relative to your weight and practically doubling that. Protein has never been a nutrient of concern in these dietary guidelines. And given how much protein is being promoted in the grocery stores these days, protein Pop-Tarts, protein water, protein everything, I feel like Americans are going to think, wow, maybe all that is justified. But maybe the reason all those products have protein is because we were only recommending half as much as was needed before. And that's really not true at all. So that has bothered a lot of health professionals. So in the new guidelines, they do say lentils, peas, beans, things like that, but they also say red meat and all the other things. So I'm a little worried that Americans are going to think, yes, I should have the protein Pop-Tarts and I should have the protein water and I should have meat because that's how Americans think of protein. Now, let me just take the last minute of my time and switch over to schools, and then I'm happy to take some questions. So I think Marianne is going to address the ultra-processed food and the sugar, which is really great. A lot of us are applauding how strongly They're coming down on added sugar and ultra-processed food. School lunch has too many of those. School lunch is an important issue because as much as many Americans don't even follow the dietary guidelines for Americans, one of the places where they have the biggest impact is when it's a safety net system in the federal government and they're required to follow the dietary guidelines. So how are schools going to implement this? So I love the idea of getting out ultra-processed food and sugar. I'm concerned about prioritizing protein in the meals of our school lunches. And I'm really not seeing a lot of direction and support of taking those foods out, incentivizing the food industry to provide the healthier foods, and allowing school lunch more funding. They've always been handcuffed by not having enough funding to provide healthy foods for school. In fact, over, I think it was just months ago that they took $1 billion away of funds that were related to COVID, that were related to programs, buying, putting a little more money into local produce, et cetera. So instead of adding money, they've recently taken away money. So I think for the rest of the conversation, we'll hear a lot from our other two speakers about how would you implement these new guidelines with 3 servings of whole fat dairy a day, prioritizing protein, saying whole fat or whole grains are good, but moving them to the bottom of the food pyramid. How is a school lunch food service director going to take that advice and use the funding that they have to improve the school lunch quality of our kids? So finish off. There's a lot of really good advice in there, but it's not very radical. And some of the issues like protein and whole grains and 3 servings of whole fat dairy a day when a majority of the world's population is lactose intolerant is really insensitive. So let me see if I could take any questions after having shared that.
Well, there are a lot of questions for you, but I'm going to start with one. Dr. Gardner, numerous studies suggest a link between meat and full fat dairy consumption and greater risk for heart disease, diabetes, and other chronic illnesses. Should we expect to see a greater epidemic of cardiovascular disease in the coming years as more Americans follow this basic food pyramid?
Well, Americans don't really follow the food pyramid, and they already, okay. They already eat too much meat. But if they were to follow these, yes. So I do a lot of work with the American Heart Association. These guidelines are not consistent with American Heart. They say for your protein, get most of it from legumes and nuts and beans, and they do not recommend whole fat dairy. I would say the dairy part of whole fat is a different issue that we do not have time for today, as opposed to the saturated fat from lard and meat and bacon and other things. I'm not really all that upset about whole fat milk in schools, especially if it was compared to chocolate milk, chocolate mm-hmm. low fat milk, which wouldn't have the saturated fat, but would have the sugar, right? And so, yeah, I mean, these are not, the new guidelines are not consistent with American Heart.
Absolutely. Low fat chocolate milk was what we got as kids in school lunches in the 70s. So, thinking about that, we have a lot of questions for you. Let's get to some of these. Henrietta Burrows, would you please start with your question?
Thanks so much, Sunita. Dr. Gardner, do you think the prioritizing of beef and butter in the new guidelines came from the influence of the beef and dairy industries?
Thank you for that question. So, you know, the politics of this are always pretty obvious, right? I mean, we have really powerful lobbyists in dairy and beef. I don't really think there's a leguminati lobbying component here where Big Bean is in there lobbying for more beans, which we should have more of. I guess what was really hurtful as being part of the committee that I was on is we were slandered for having too many conflicts with food industry. So in every single dietary guidelines update that's been released forever, when they get senior nutrition folks, many of them at some point or another have had some connection with the food industry. But the hypocrisy was just horrific when we were slandered for all of our connections and they chose a new committee of 9 people who, when they disclosed their ties, actually half of them had closer ties to dairy and beef than the original committee that was looking at this. I don't think there is any way to avoid politics here. One of the groups getting these guidelines out is the Department of Agriculture. The Department of Agriculture represents all ag. That means it represents beef and dairy and pork and chicken and at some level vegetables and fruits and beans, peas, and lentils. But the powerful lobbyists are more the meat and the dairy and the egg industry that are high in protein. So there is certainly politics involved. I don't think that will ever change. So we just have to have transparency about it and do what we can to address it beyond my capacity at this point, interested in other people's perspectives.
Thank you. Irene Diaz-Bazin has the next question.
Yes, thank you. What guidance do authorities give to parents regarding school meals? Would be advisable to send meals from home for minority families with limited financial resources? How can they meet the new nutrition guidelines without facing economic challenges? Thank you.
Oh, it's such a good question. You know, wouldn't it be wonderful if parents had the time and the resources to make lunch and it didn't have to come from schools? Really, part of the issue that school lunch is there is because so many parents don't have the resources and don't have the time. So many of our kids get a huge proportion of their calories from not only school lunch, but school breakfast. I will add the perspective that there are parents who make horribly unhealthy lunches to send to school with their kids. I've seen places where they, back in the days of Michelle Obama's Healthy Hunger Free Kid Act, when they were making the school meals healthier, parents were showing up at the gates of the school and handing candy bars through the bars to their kids who were complaining that the foods were too healthy. So bringing parents into this is an important part. And I think the parent angle of this is almost just as challenging. So do they have the time and do they have the resources? That is a challenge. Were they raised in such a way that they're prepared to give their kids a healthy lunch? Some of them just go for the simple, convenient thing that comes out of the store that isn't all that healthy also. So I think it's a more challenging issue than just, will the parents be able to replace this? That's a topic for a longer conversation, but thank you for bringing that up.
Considering how much meat prices have risen, to what extent will we be able to adhere to this pyramid?
Oh, well, I would actually be happy if meat prices increased. So the meat prices really are artificially low, to be perfectly honest. There's different levels of support that allow meat to be low. And part of that is our concentrated animal feeding operations that our other speaker today will address. I actually really think meat prices should be higher to reflect the true cost of food. And that if we had better quality meat and less meat, that would be well in line with what most health professionals have recommended for a long time. I work a lot with the Culinary Institute of America, with chefs that are making food taste great, and they're pushing for a protein flip, which is celebrating beans, peas, and lentils and vegetables at the center of the plate and having smaller portions of meat, not 6 ounces, but 2 ounces. So if the cost went up, but it was a smaller portion or a condiment or a side dish, that would actually, I think, be consistent with good health promotion, but not so much with this new food pyramid guideline that came out.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Our next speaker is Dr. Marion Nessel, author of many books, including What to Eat Now and the blog Food Politics. Dr. Nessel, let's begin with this question. The guidelines tell Americans to reduce ultra-processed foods, but most of the U.S. food supply is, in fact, heavily processed. Do you think this advice places too much responsibility on individuals rather than addressing the structure of the food system? And to follow up, how does HHS need to define more clearly what highly processed foods are?
Yeah, first of all, I'm really happy to be here and to follow Christopher Gardner, whose work I admire a great deal. I want to make a couple of comments on what he said, and this leads right into your question. I was on the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee in 1995, and that was a time at which the Scientific Advisory Committee chose the research questions, did the research, wrote the research report, and wrote the dietary guidelines. It was a scientific process. Today, the Scientific Advisory Committee writes the Advisory Committee's report. It's advisory. The agencies take it over completely from there. And one of the issues that's very clearly stated in the new dietary guidelines and new pyramid is that the function of these documents is to educate the public so that the public can exercise its personal responsibility. And in fact, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Made a statement just last week saying, we are not going to do any legislation or regulation about this. That would be nanny state. We are educating the public about personal responsibility. And if the focus is on personal responsibility, then the government's role is in fact education. If you really want, but, and the food industry loves that because the food industry knows perfectly well that education is not enough to change dietary behavior. If education was enough, then 40 years of pyramids and plates and whatever would have done the job, and they haven't. And I, by the way, was a big fan of the first pyramid. The first pyramid, which had meat and dairy at the top and grains and fruits and vegetables at the bottom, was the product of 12 years of research, two kinds of research. Would the specifics of portion size and number of servings meet nutritional requirements? And did the public understand that what was at the top of the pyramid was what they were supposed to eat less of? And the pyramid won over many, many, many other designs. People did not like the upside down pyramid because they felt it was unbalanced, and they did not like plates because they couldn't understand them. And in fact, plates are much harder to understand than the pyramid. So the pyramid is a good design. It doesn't work upside down. And the one that we have now that was introduced in January is very meat centric, as Dr. Gardner said. It's a eat more meat pyramid, and it's a eat whole fat dairy pyramid. And meat is, because protein is understood by the public as a euphemism for meat, and whole fat dairy is understood by the public as a euphemism for raw milk. So this pyramid and dietary guidelines, without saying so explicitly, are about eating real food, fine, love that message, but it's also about eating more meat and high-fat dairy products and whole milk and raw milk as far as that goes. And there are many examples of the Secretary of Health and Human Services and the Secretary of Agriculture drinking raw milk, posed with milk mustaches. And in fact, the President of the United States posed with a milk mustache ad. So the personal responsibility message is one that gets the government off the hook. The government doesn't have to do anything about taxes, about labeling, about restrictions on marketing, about restrictions on the content of foods. It can just say, it's up to you. We think you should eat less sugar, and it's up to you to make that happen. And we hope that the food companies will go along with it. I don't think that's going to work.
Correct. You've expressed concern that people on SNAP benefits and WIC may not have access to whole foods because of cost. But isn't it cheaper to eat a plant-focused diet rather than one that emphasizes meat and dairy? Say, for example, the cost of a can of chickpeas and a bunch of kale versus the cost of a pound of chicken or beef?
Well, I think there are two issues, cost, time, and palatability. It's perfectly possible to eat absolutely delicious plant-based foods if you know how to cook. If you have the equipment, if you have pots, pans, and knives, if you have a refrigerator, if you have a stove, and there are very, very large swaths of the American population that do not, in fact, have these things. And if you are a low-income worker working three jobs to try to earn enough money to feed your family, the last thing in the world you want to have to do is to go food shopping when there may not be a grocery store anywhere near where you live. You may not have transportation. You may not have time to cook. And you may not have the equipment for cooking. So the food industry has moved into that gap by producing very cheap products, ultra processed, and I'll do a quick explanation of what that means. It means industrially produced, doesn't look anything like the food that it was derived from. You can't make it in your home kitchen because you don't have the equipment or the industrial additives, and the products were designed to be profitable because they can last long on a shelf, and also designed to be irresistible, if not addictive. The whole purpose of ultra-processed foods is to have products that you can't stop eating, because the food industry is not a social science agency and it's not a public health agency. The food industry is a business. Its job is to make money. That's what they're about, and produce profits for shareholders. And ultra-processed foods are extraordinarily profitable. So that's what we're dealing with. If you as an individual are going to a grocery store to try to eat healthfully, you are fighting the entire food system on your own.
Absolutely. So my colleague, Peter Sherman from ACOM, has a related question.
Hi. Thank you, Sunita. Well, I have a number of questions. People have known about the negative health effects of fast foods for years and years and years. Supersize Me, the documentary that came out many years ago that really showed, I think, in really stark terms what eating this food does to you. And yet people will defend the right to eat this food. There are people that see these foods as inherent parts of their culture and their traditions. And I guess I'm wondering, what is your sense about the most effective way to get this message across around the need to rebuild our relationship with real food? Clearly, what RFK is doing is trying to get at that, although the way you're describing it, it's remarkable to hear that this is really about just pawning it off on individual responsibility, which we hear was a strategy of the climate of oil companies as well, to push it on people and away from corporations. So I'm curious what you think is the most effective way to sort of inform people, even people who maybe aren't able to afford the time to go shopping, to cook, things like that. And a related question, I'll keep it very short. I was in Honduras a few years ago. I was driving through San Pedro Sula, and the skyline was dotted with fast food restaurants. And it just struck me that if archaeologists were to come 1,000 years from now, these would be the ruins of empire. This is what they would find next to the Mayan temples. They would find the golden arches and the KFCs. And diabetes is surging in Honduras. I'm wondering what you see in terms of these food industries pushing their products abroad as Americans perhaps start to turn away from them the way they did with tobacco. Thank you.
Well, those are related questions. I'm a public health person. You know, and a public health approach to the problem of poor diets is to go what in public health terms is called upstream. That is, you look for the basic causes of why people eat the way they do. And the people in the United States who eat the healthiest diets are people with money and people with education. And so if you want to change the population's diet, you provide people with enough money to buy healthier foods and with the education to go with it. And then you develop a food system that promotes healthier eating. You don't leave it to individuals to have to fight the entire food system on their own. But this is an exact opposition to what food companies want. Let me just say that eating less is very, very bad for business. And if you want people to eat less and eat less of the wrong kinds of foods or eat less of ultra-processed foods, you are making efforts that are going to hurt businesses. Businesses don't like that. They're going to lobby. One of the questions that was asked was whether the new pyramid was about meat and dairy industry lobbying or whether it was something else. I did a blog post, and I write a blog at foodpolitics.com, and I wrote that I thought the meat and dairy industries had a great deal to do with the content of these particular guidelines and pyramid. And people wrote in and said, no, this is ideology. This is the ideology of the Secretary of Health and Human Services and the ideology of the Trump administration. But I think it's a mixture of both. So if your ideology is that you don't do anything to hurt industry, and we saw this recently over the issue of glyphosate, which Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said it causes cancer just a few months ago. It causes cancer. And now he's saying, oh, but if we take glyphosate out of the food supply, it will hurt corn and soybean producers. So the politics of this is deeply entrenched. We're dealing with capitalism, with late stage capitalism here, in every way in which it works. And if you try to change people's diets by educating them that they should eat better, that's not going to work. You got to change the system. And how do you change the system? Well, I think I've got a long list, starting with universal basic income, universal school meals,